Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has experienced teams who can craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex. Real wealth requires real solutions. Connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com.
The FT.
Welcome to Banking Weekly from the Financial Times with me, Patrick Jenkins. Joining me in the studio today are Laura Noonan, our investment banking correspondent, Emma Dunkley, our retail banking correspondent, and down the line from Brussels, we have Christian Oliver in our Brussels bureau. Today we'll be looking at deferred tax assets and a brewing row in Europe. Secondly, UK banks, what's happened to their bonuses this year. And finally, Shawbrook, another UK bank, floats. DTAs, though, is our first topic. Deferred tax assets. These are something that European banks have traditionally relied upon quite a lot for their capital. But there's a row brewing in Brussels, Christian.
That's right, yes. What we know at the moment is the European Commission is just on the hunt for information. It's the initial questionnaire period where they're looking into Greece, Portugal, Italy and Spain, just asking for some information on the way that those countries use deferred tax assets. The main inquiry is based on state aid, so the idea is not necessarily into the assets themselves, but the idea of the guarantees given to those assets by the states and whether that's illegal.
Well, I'll bring in Laura here because it's a pretty technical area, Laura. These are assets, so-called. They don't actually exist in any real form, but they've been used as a proxy for capital. But they've changed in the way that they've been treated under regulatory standards, haven't they?
Yeah, I mean, there are a couple of different things going on here. The first is in relation to deferred tax assets themselves. And traditionally, the idea was if you had a deferred tax asset, which meant that essentially you would pay less tax on your earnings in future years, you were allowed to count that as part of your high-quality capital. With these new banking rules coming in called Basel III, banks must phase out counting these as capital. In Europe, they have until 2019 to actually phase those out. Now then, separately, several southern European countries last year converted these deferred tax assets into a different kind of asset, which is called a deferred tax credit. Now that does enable different treatment because a deferred tax credit has to be paid even if the bank doesn't actually make earnings in the future. Even if there are no future profits to offset it against, a deferred tax credit must still be paid. And because of that, you are allowed to count a deferred tax credit as part of your capital under Basel III. So what they are looking at now is whether these countries have actually given state aid to their banks because they have converted these deferred tax assets into these deferred tax credits, which give a higher benefit to the bank, but which also place a higher burden on the state. And it is on the basis that the banks get a benefit and the state gets a burden. That's the area where you may have actually a state aid concern. Now, there is one other thing to kind of bear in mind here, and that is that these southern European banks traditionally had higher deferred tax assets than the banks in the north of Europe. And they had that because of a very particular tax treatment. So in the UK, France and Germany, if you make a provision for loan impairments now, you get tax relief on it this year. In these countries, if you make a provision for loan impairment now, you don't get tax relief on it. You get a deferred tax asset. So that is the reason why they had historically higher levels of DTAs. And that is kind of the reason why they could argue that this system is actually levelling the playing field rather than giving their banks an advantage over banks elsewhere in the Eurozone.
Excellent. Thanks for that technical explanation. So obviously this is potentially big story for these banks. I mean, they have, as Laura explained, Christian, they've relied to a large part on this type of capital. Equally, it seems as if a potential battle is looming, I suppose, between Brussels, which is considering this from the state aid point of view, and regulators at the ECB, who might be considering far more as a kind of top concern the capital strength of the banks.
I think also within Brussels itself, there's not entire agreement of the best way to handle a case like this. I mean, we must be clear that there isn't yet a formal investigation, but that would be a big move politically. We know the ECB doesn't really like this kind of capital, and it's also a question of whether Brussels decides to play its big bazooka card, which is this state aid investigation, which they would have to go through with. I think many in Brussels think that this is a very dangerous time to do this. Margarete Vestager, the commissioner herself, was quite clear last month that really no decision has been taken on starting what would be such a sensitive investigation. Basically, I think we've got to stress at the moment they're just getting the pieces together. And the thing that they're trying to examine is really whether this is selective really for the banking sector. And this is whether the investigation will go forward. If you find that these countries are offering similar sort of advantages to all sorts of companies across all sorts of sectors, there might be less of a case for doing it. If it looks like they're doing it very selectively, picking out the banks for this, then it might be quite hard to avoid a full state aid investigation.
Well, either way, there's a heck of a lot at stake for many of Southern Europe's banks, so we'll watch this very closely. Christian, thank you so much. We move on to our second topic. It's bonus season again, and Laura, you've been looking at the UK banks and how their bonuses have compared this year to prior years, and it looks like there's been a pretty marked downward trend.
Yeah, there has indeed. There's been a pretty large fall overall. So what we did was we looked at the five biggest UK banks, so RBS, Lloyds, Standard Chartered, Barclays and HSBC, and we looked at the total amount of variable compensation, as they call it, which they actually awarded last year, and it was down by about £1 billion across the five, which is a very sizable drop. It's a drop of about 15%. So certainly they have begun to toe the line and to make some pretty sizable cuts to their bonus pools.
This isn't necessarily anything to do with declines in profitability, because in some cases banks have been doing better.
Yeah, I mean, some of these banks have actually posted better results for 2014 than they did previously. It's more a change in the culture. I mean, they're keen to show that they don't award big bonuses anymore and that they've moved to a more sustainable level. It's also partly because of the new EU-wide cap, which actually makes it harder for them to pay bonuses. So they are now only allowed to pay bonuses up to 2 times fixed salary. So that is also having an impact, and they're thinking about other ways to pay people. So some of them would have brought in the role-based allowances last year, which is basically a top up to your basic salary to compensate for the fact that you would be getting a lower bonus. So that has had an impact as well. Although we did find that even when you included that, the overall total comp on a per head basis has been falling across most of the banks.
Is it possible to draw out the data to say exactly how much on a net basis, if you include the allowances, how much total compensation has fallen by?
There are figures for that, but the issue is that for most banks, when they looked at the total staff costs, they also include things like the cost of restructuring that year. So if they had to make payouts for people who are leaving, so those are all included in the same numbers. So we know that there was a small single digit fall in terms of the total compensation bill and the total compensation bill per head. But it does become slightly tricky to say how that actually reflects on the person's overall package. It's also complicated because of the variable compensation pool, not all of it's actually charged this year, because now it becomes more and more deferred. So they've only taken a certain percentage of that through this year's profit and loss. So trying to work out exactly what's happened to individuals' comp is quite tricky.
You've crunched the numbers particularly on the UK banks. Interesting, obviously, in the light of the UK general election, bonuses are always a big issue politically, particularly in an election year. So I guess the data you've discovered may take the sting out of any political backlash against bankers over the next month or so. How does the UK stack up against other countries in Europe or indeed internationally?
Internationally, bonuses have really been coming down across the pack. So I think we are seeing falls. I mean, we haven't done the same level of detail for the other banks, but I think it's safe to say bonuses have been falling everywhere within the mainstream banking industry. Now, as you get into the more shadow banking, hedge funds, those kind of areas, certainly with the higher earnings these days, there has been a return to very healthy bonuses there. But I think more and more, if you do want to get a really standout bonus, you need to move outside of the mainstream, like regulated banking world, and into the shadow banking and into things like hedge funds, where they have a lot more freedom and they certainly do seem to be paying out very large bonuses again.
And sure enough, we've seen quite a lot of prominent bankers move away from mainstream banking into the shadows. Thank you very much, Laura, for that. Finally, on to our third topic of the day. So Emma, Shawbrook has floated on the stock exchange. Remind us who Shawbrook are and how important they are.
Shawbrook is among a number of so-called challenger banks, or perhaps a better term might be specialist lenders, as these are the smaller startup banks that focus on providing loans to small and medium-sized businesses. So Shawbrook is based in Essex and came about a few years ago and is compared to a rival lender called Aldermore. And in fact, its flotation last week comes hot on the heels of Aldermore. They're only about 2 weeks apart. Demand for the bank's shares was pretty high because the original price range was set from about 255p to 305p. But in fact, the bank had to narrow the range only a couple of days before the listing due to high demand from investors. So in the end, the bank ended up floating with a price of 290p, which valued the lender at 725 million, which actually placed Shawbrook as the second biggest flotation so far this year in terms of market capitalisation behind Auto Trader, which admittedly was a lot bigger at over 2 billion.
Why are investors so keen to invest in Britain's banks?
Well, there's a lot of appetite for some of these smaller startup banks because they're very high growth stories. They're without the legacy issues of some of the big incumbent banks, so they have a clean slate in that regard. And they also are exhibiting very high return on equity. So, for example, Aldermore in the second half of last year had an ROE of near 20%. And this compares to the five big incumbent banks, Lloyds, RBS, HSBC, Barclays, Standard Chartered, which actually fell below 8% in terms of ROE last year. And this compares with an ROE of about 11% in 2009. So the incumbent banks are still lagging in that sense. And I think a lot of institutional fund managers and even retail investors are keen to get involved on this high growth story.
So are they diverting their allocation of assets away from the incumbent banks and towards the new startups?
It's hard to say. It's tough to find conclusive data which shows that fund managers are reallocating. But what you are finding is a lot of fund managers, such as some of the guys and some of the smaller fund boutiques, which are starting to place money with these startup banks, who have actually been averse to a lot of the incumbent banks over the past few years purely because of legacy issues. So, for example, you have Jeremy Lang at Ardevra, who has not been a fan of banks in the past, but recently invested in TSB in a view that this is a newer startup bank with high growth potential and doesn't have a lot of the legacy issues associated with the big incumbent banks.
That's interesting you mentioned TSB, because obviously they're another story of appeal, I suppose, from a slightly different angle. Sabadell of Spain bidding for TSB a couple of weeks ago.
Exactly. TSB has come under the hammer for not having a big enough loan book and asset base. So with the combined force of Sabadell, this should help the bank expand into the SME sector, which should ultimately help boost its loan book and therefore ability to grow, which I think a lot of shareholders were very pleased about.
Well, clearly SMEs are where it's at. Thank you very much for that, Emma. That's it for this week. All that's left for me to do is to thank Emma, Laura, and also Christian in Brussels. And thank you for listening. Remember, you can keep up to date with all of the latest banking stories at ft.com/banking. Banking Weekly was produced by Fiona Simon. Until next week, goodbye.
For more downloads, go to ft.com/podcasts.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has experienced teams who can craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex. Real wealth requires real solutions. Connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com.
Did you know the Capital Ideas podcast now has a new monthly edition hosted by Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin? Through the words and experiences of investment professionals, you'll discover who was their best mentor, what's a mistake they made that changed their approach, and how do they find their next great idea? Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Published by American Funds Distributors, Inc.